buzzer McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and my man, D Squared Dan Dockage, two fired coaches talking ball, the definitive podcast. And on today's show, I'm going to have a conversation with Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski, who is fully healthy, spent a year without USA basketball and really focusing on his young and talented team. They'll be going to the Dominican Republic at the end of the year. And also, we will be joined by Alabama head coach Avery Johnson, who has an absolutely terrific recruiting class coming in. Colin Sexton, one of the best point guards in America. His two leading scorers were freshmen. We'll have great insight on what is going on in the Tide basketball program and probably a couple of Coach Saban stories. But first, my man D Squared. It's been a while. What have you been up to? I know you got a big golf outing today. We got a little member guest or member. What do we got going on?
Well, we had a golf outing yesterday, my friend. The Tom Dockett, my father, we have a memorial golf outing. And it was a celebrity event, really. We had Nick Zeitzloff and Max Biefeld from old IU days. The great Andrew Dockett, who is now headed to Ohio State, apparently announced that before the outing without telling his father, which is fine. We're not mad about it. And then we had a good friend of mine who's a police captain, police chief of the safest town in the United States. He has made it the safest town, Ligonier, Indiana. So it was a celebrity event, Seth. A lot of money raised, a lot of beer drank, a lot of auction items. Everybody made it home safe. Successful day, my friend.
You know what? And it's been an interesting summer. I mean, I had a chance this summer to go to the NBA Summer League, which blew my mind because, you know, you think it's summer basketball, right? Summer basketball.
Right.
A couple NBA teams, reversible jerseys. You put the name of the jersey on the front. You play some ball. Boom, move on. 18,000 people. Thomas and Mack Center. Last time I saw it that full, UNLV was beating me by about 100 with Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony and those guys. So, I mean, it was an unbelievable event. I know you had a chance to watch some of it. What's kind of your takeaway of, like, this phenom rookie class? You know, the Tatums, the Balls, the Dennis Smiths, the Caleb Swanigans, the Jason Tatums. What was your takeaway from that stuff?
Well, I'm going to do what you do, and we all do. All right. Let's preface all this by saying we know it's summer league, okay?
Yes.
We get that the guys you're dealing with or playing against, you know, aren't going to be on rosters. Like, you know, Ball had like 36 one night, and a lot of them were against James Blackman from Indiana, who can't guard a chair. He's not going to be there in the NBA. Or if he is, he's not going to be guarding Lonzo Ball. All right, we get all that. But I will say this. This group is perfect for the NBA. Like, we think the playoffs weren't any good. Okay, fine. People can say that. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, depending on your taste. But this summer has kept the NBA in your conversation big time. Like, you know, we always say football is 12 months a year, right? I mean, football, we got to have it 12 months a year. NBA basketball with this summer has been 12 months a year. That's my biggest take. And you know what? I also think perfect match. There's never been a more perfect match than Lonzo Ball and Magic Johnson, Magic running the team, because that dude fits the style. Total respect for Magic. L.A. guys now. I absolutely love it. I was glad for Ball. I was glad for Caleb Swanigan that played really well. But more than that, perfect summer, Seth, for the NBA. Couldn't have been better.
Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you one thing. The one thing I was amazed about is, one, look, you're 100% right. I said the other day on Twitter, like, you're playing against a bunch of dudes that are probably going to end up in the G League or overseas. But how hard these guys played, and with the passion and the energy of, because you know what? In the end, three-quarters of the guys, they're playing for the next paycheck. They're playing for a chance to get a two-way contract. They're playing for a chance to get, you know, a contract overseas, and they're playing for a chance to get in a roster spot. The guy, to me, just the two guys for me that just I thought were really true, Dennis Smith. I saw him last year at the Adidas Nations, and it was his first game back from or playing after his ACL. He reminded me of some people say Baron Davis. I see Derrick Rose. I mean, physically strong, aggressive, attacks. I mean, Dallas has their point guard of the future, and then they're going to have, obviously, Yogi with an opportunity to play in the second unit, or they can play together. And then Donovan Mitchell from Louisville. He was those two guys, to me, kind of jumped out. We're going to talk about Tatum. We're going to talk about Josh Jackson. We're going to talk about Ball. We're going to talk about what sneakers he's going to wear. I mean, and all that other stuff. But, you know, those are a couple of guys. And your guy, Caleb Swanigan, he was like Pac-Man, gobbling up rebounds. And I think it's great that our sport is not just AU basketball in the summer, like for what we used to live, but now this summer league is a great platform, really good platform.
Seth, you said it, man. Hey, look, people out there listening to this podcast, you're a basketball fan, 18,000 people at a summer league game. You're a basketball fan, and you want basketball to thrive. Home Run Derby's on. A lot of people are clicked over to watch summer league basketball game. We're talking about summer league basketball now. I'll give you this. All right, let me talk about Dennis Smith for a minute. I know he's a sensation. I know he's a talent. Nobody's ever doubted that talent. The question is this. When it gets a grind, when it gets day-to-day, when you get tired, he's never been considered the most, I don't know about coachable, but just solid. There's always some stuff with him. You're going to be able to hang in there for 82 games. That's his challenge. You know, you're going to be able to, let's face it, the NBA, my God, if you're any good, the season starts, middle October, middle November, whatever, early November, actually, for training camp, and then basically on early October, because Halloween, it kind of starts, and then all of a sudden, you're going till June. Now, if you're not locked in, it's going to get exposed. So that's the question I would have with Dennis Smith. But in terms of the guys that were, I've never heard anything bad about Lonzo Ball. Josh Jackson has acted like a bit of a knucklehead a few times. You're going to have to, that can't come out. Tatum's been nothing but great. The summer league, I thought, showed the talent. The season's going to show whether they're pros or not yet, and I think there's a big difference.
Yeah, and I think that when you're seeing the NBA, these guys are working at their trade. I think that the trickle-down effect of guys loving the game and working at the game, and I think the leaders of the NBA, there's a higher character of leaders in the NBA right now, guys that are very professional, and we know that all these young guys, they emulate the guys that are basically the standard bearers of the league.
Hey,
speaking of standard bearers.
Let me ask you this. All right. Do you think, because there's always been a lot of money in it, right? There's always been, the NBA guy's making more than the average guy by a bunch, okay? But now these numbers are so stupid, right? These contracts are so out of your
mind. Monopoly money. It's monopoly money. Ask go.
Yeah. Do you think
Get
that
Park
that
Place.
Affects now, like, people are like, hey, I'm not going to screw this up because, so instead of going out, guys are in the gym instead of doing whatever, guys are working hard. Do you think that affects it at all?
Yeah, I do think that affects it, but I think what affects it as much in my gut is just that the guys that we identify with as the leaders of the sport, whether it's, Curry, whether it's Durant, whether it's LeBron, whether it's the best players in the sport, carry themselves in a way that – are different. They're really the leaders of the sport aren't knuckleheads. The leaders of the sports are pros. They have a good message. They're socially aware. They have substance to them. You don't read about off the court stuff. You don't, you have a good set of leaders. Now, speaking of leadership, you kind of teased it a little bit. But my man, all right, one-time Wolverine, now Buckeye. Andrew Dockett, you got to give me. I mean, like, my guy is going. He's going right back into the Big Ten. All right, taking on the challenges, working on that communications degree, and hooping. Come on, now you got. Let's get deep into this now. What's my man doing here?
My man Andrew Dockett is the first basketball player to transfer from Michigan to the Ohio State University. Now, there had been a football player that did it who ended up being great. His name was Bourne. He was a lineman. You know what? Coach Holtman and Andrew and Quinnipiac, Baker Dunleavy was great, man. Baker Dunleavy's the coach at Quinnipiac. Andrew was there. He didn't – there was a mess up on his getting into school, the journalism school. He was in grad school. He's a 3.5 at Michigan. Damn, you ought to be able to get anything you want. He's the smartest guy in the history of Dockett.
No doubt.
But by 10. Anyway, long story short, it opened up his recruiting. Chris Holtmann called me because he lost a freshman guard. And you know what? How do you pass that up as a kid? You know, how do you pass up the opportunity? You got 1 year. You know, they only got 7-8 players. You're going to have, if you do what you're supposed to do, you're going to have at least a chance to play meaningful minutes, a chance to be a leader on a team. First-year coach. And so he did it. He wanted to do it. Baker was great with it. I'll tell you this. I will say this to anybody that asks me. I would send my son anytime, any day to go play for Baker Dunleavy. He was – that thing is good. That thing at Quinnipiac is organized. But let's be honest, you got a Midwest kid that has an opportunity with only 1 year, you know, to go play at Ohio State. I mean, what the hell? And you know, me, Seth, and you're the same way. You act like you're not, but you are. We like to stir it up a little bit. We ain't afraid of saying, hey, well, your kid's going to Michigan or Ohio State from Michigan. He's a traitor, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? We'll stir it up. We ain't afraid. You know?
Hey, all I know is it just makes the Big Ten games you're doing at Michigan more interesting. It makes the Big Ten games you're doing at Ohio State more interesting. We know the games you do at Indiana are more interesting.
Your boy is whining about, you know, Dan doesn't stop. Stop. Like I told Andrew, man, you screw up, I'm ripping your ass. Let your mother kiss you on the backside and tell you your dad is wrong. You know, no different. no different even a little bit. So, Izzo can get...
Well, hey, I'm happy for my guy. I mean, he's done a lot of good things. He's earned it. Baker Dunleavy is one of the all-time best guys. Obviously, he learned under one of the all-time best guys in Jay Wright at Villanova. He'll do a great job at Quinnipiac and building that thing the right way. And Chris Holtmann will do a great job at Ohio State, taking over for a terrific coach in Thad Matta, and you know has an exciting opportunity.
Let me ask you this question, because you've been at different places and you've been a first-year coach, you know, at different places. I was only a first-year head coach at Bowling Green, but you were at different places. What is the most important thing for a guy coming in, and this is pretty much not a total rebuild. They've got some good players, but this is a good-sized rebuild. What I'm trying to tell Andrew how the coach will be. What's your sense on how a coach is going to be first-year big rebuild, big program?
The whole thing is creating your culture the way you want it. You got to have someone coaching the locker room so that everyone's on the same page. You got to establish an identity in terms of how hard we're going to work, the type of environment we're going to have, the effort we're going to bring every single day, and making sure that everyone's on the same page doing the right things on and off the court. And to do that, you're going to need – I love the idea of a fifth-year guy that's been there, played at the highest level, been in a good program, can say no, you know, to a young player, no, that's not right. We don't do it like that, all right? And that can be a reflection, you know, the old quote-unquote reflection of a coach. That stuff's real. That stuff's real if you're trying to – you know, start or rebuild a program, especially at Ohio State that obviously has had a rich tradition and had success. So I think it's a perfect fit for him because he does have all those intangibles and he's going to get an opportunity to play and he's not afraid to have a voice is my observation being that he is your son. Is that true?
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, he will have a voice, but I tried to tell him that. I said, you know, what you're probably going to see is going to be a lot different than what you're going to see in a program in year three, you know. And so there, I think, personally, there can be no complaining. There can be no this is too hard. Because coaches try to set culture right away. And I think that Chris or Baker or whoever takes over, I'm sure Avery Johnson did the same thing at Alabama. You know, recruiting culture, who we recruiting, what kind of guys are we bringing in, playing culture, school culture, you know. And I think it's an interesting thing. And I think Ohio State is, I'm fascinated by it a little bit.
No, I think it's great. You know, speaking of culture, this is like my professional segue here. You see, you do this all the time. Earlier today, I had a chance to sit down with Duke Hall of Fame coach Mike Krzyzewski, better known as Mike or Coach K, depending on how long you've known the guy. And he had some interesting takes on not only his Duke program, but college basketball and access to players in the summer. So here's my conversation with Coach K. It's my pleasure to welcome in Duke head coach, Hall of Fame coach, Olympic coach, Mike Krzyzewski to the podcast. And coach, this is an interesting summer for you. You had your back injuries this past season, had to sit out a little bit, but how's your back feeling? How are you feeling? And, you know, what kind of things you've been doing to deal with the uncomfort you went through during the course of the season?
Yeah, you know, I have no. I had a very successful surgery, and once I came back during the season, after a 4-week layoff and recovery, I've not had any problems at all, and just, you know, actually in really good health. You know, what you're trying to keep together, you're getting old, so there are always a few ailments, but actually not having the responsibility of USA basketball now has given me a chance to really focus on the spring and summer thus far on our program and to make some, you know, upgrades, to see, you know, create a course of action going into next season that it would hopefully not prove to be only successful for the season, but as we continue our program.
How time-consuming was USA Basketball in terms of taking you away from the day-to-day operations, especially in the summer when those freshmen come on campus?
It was very time-consuming, but well worth it. You know, it's an amazing honor. I learned so much. You know, in order to do something outstanding or be a part of something outstanding, you know, there are things you have to give up, but hopefully, you know, the total package is something that was extremely beneficial for our program, and it was. You know, last summer was probably the most because I missed all of recruiting in July, and when my new guys got here, and by the time we got back, you know, we won, which is good, but, you know, my guys were about 2 months ahead of me. And then we encountered a lot of injuries. So it would have been nice if I would have had that time beforehand to develop even better relationships with our guys and help them. But that wasn't the case. But again, overall, I could not be more thankful of the opportunity to do that for 11 years.
It's incredible. How about the continuity of having your coaching staff when you're away? How important is it to have guys like, you know, Capel and Shire and just your staff that are your guys that know you and the expectation of what Duke basketball is about?
Well, you know, Seth, you bring up a great point in that it's not the head coach. It's like the coaching staff. And that includes your strength coach and trainer, your director of basketball operations. You know, we've had great continuity in our program, and I've from about the mid-90s until now, I've only hired my former players so that they would, not every player, but a player that I thought would be good as a coach. And he understands Duke. He understands me. He understands the process that a kid has to go through, and that's proven to be really successful. You know, the last guy that wasn't was Mike Bray, and he's proven to be, be pretty successful, including against us. He's built such a really good program at Notre Dame.
Yeah, Mike he's done an incredible job, and different than most people. I mean, if you think about it, he's kind of been able to stay old while, you know, some programs like, you know, yourself have kind of bought into the, you know, getting kids in, and obviously just the culture of our game is so different. But Mike's, it's like anything else. You try to figure out how you can win at your specific institution, and Mike's figured that out. Speaking of guys moving on, though, have you had a chance to see your guys in the summer league, and kind of what's your evaluation of your guys as they transition into the NBA?
Yeah, we keep in touch with all of them, including guys, you know, that didn't just, you know, leave Duke. But, yeah, I think Sacramento is making a great decision with Harry and kind of bringing him along and making sure that he is slowly and bringing him along to make sure that he gets further and further away from his injury. Obviously, Jason Tatum had a fabulous summer, and the Celtics have had a fabulous summer. And Frank Jackson broke, he had that Jones fracture in his foot. that it occurred in late May. And, you know, he wasn't able to participate, but, you know, he will. You know, he got, I think he signed a 3-year contract, which is a little bit unusual for, although maybe not in this day and age, for second round. And, you know, the guys have done well, and I was really pleased with the stick-to-itiveness of Quinn Cook, you know, and, you know, where he's landed with New Orleans. And then Emile and Matt are still trying to figure that out. I think Emile will go to Minnesota's camp, their, you know, their training camp in September. So hopefully he can stick on, and hopefully Matt Jones will have an opportunity.
Yeah, I had a chance to do one of Quinn's games in the summer league, and you know what impressed me the most, and I actually grabbed him after it. His team was not playing well, and at halftime, he actually sought out Alvin Gentry, and you know, basically who was just observing the game, and he said, "Coach, what can I do differently?" And it really made an impression on me, and I grabbed Alvin actually after the game, and he said that's kind of the stuff he's looking for, because you know, I mean, at that point, towards the end of your roster, you're looking for fit guys.
And, right.
Quinn and said, "Quinn, you don't know, but just sitting here watching you, that was probably the best thing you did all day." And you know, it was nice to see.
Yeah, you know, one thing, because obviously you're done such a good job in telling people about the game and promoting the game, and you've been a coach most of your life. You still are a coach, but you're doing this now. You know, one of the things that's hurt in our sport right now, Seth, is access. You know, like we're in summer school right now, and we can work with our guys 2 hours a week, and it's utterly ridiculous, really. You would not have someone in theater and music or whatever their passion is outside of the classroom limited to the number of hours you could spend with someone who could teach that to them. And it's really archaic. And what happens with a lot of these kids come from the culture that we have in college basketball right now, and I don't think the NCAA in basketball has kept up with that culture, is that they work out, you know, and they have workout guys. And so one of the things that a kid here might say, "Well, I need to have a workout guy." Well, we don't want that. We don't know who that workout guy works for. And but we also, it's not allowed to have that workout guy work you out on our facilities. So, you know, it's some of these rules have not been looked at as the culture has changed quickly. And that, is to me, is one of the worst ones, in that we should be able to get to know our guys, and especially in a summer school session where, you know, they have a lot of time, and it's a shortcoming. It's a big shortcoming in our sport right now, and the process to correct it is so slow and archaic that NCAA basketball, college basketball, doesn't respond as quickly as what happens before in AAU and what happens after in NBA. You kind of hit bureaucracy and not progress when you deal with college basketball right now.
I totally agree with you. You know, the NCAA is always worried about third parties. Well, if you don't have access to your players more than 2 hours a week, and a kid is hungry to continue to work on his game, he's going to seek out some type of third party.
Right.
Instead of having your guys' arms around him and having some type of continuity, and also in terms of your team building, because if a guy's working with his own workout guru, that workout guru has his agenda. When you're working with your guys, I would think that it's going to be your team agenda, and it kind of works counterproductive to building a sense of community, wouldn't you think?
Well, no, it's absolutely wrong. And the other thing it does, it's insulting to us as coaches, you know, where we've done this. I've just finished my 42nd year. So I'm working in 11 years with the U.S. and I don't need a workout guy to work with my guys. You know, neither do other college coaches. We want to work with them. And by the way, we're going to teach them things that build up to what we're going to do to build a team. And it's a really bad thing. It's a bad thing, and it's simple. You know, and remember when you've coached for a long time. The reason this came in is because a long time ago people said, you know, they don't trust coaches because we work them too much. And well, it's time to look, haven't we passed that time? We're educators. You know, we're not going to keep a kid in the gym for 20 hours a day or whatever, but we're going to bring them in enough to where we get to know them, to where we help them. We find out, you know, on the court is one of the best places to talk to a kid. You know, you're shooting free throws. Hey, how's your writing course going? You know, pretty good. You know, I'm having some trouble. Well, after we get through shooting, let's sit down and talk about it. But, you know, in other words, it promotes communication and relationship building. And for us not to be afforded that opportunity is absolutely, absolutely wrong.
I agree. Now, how much, because of the lack of access of those 2 hours, how much do you put on like a guy like Grayson Allen, who's obviously been in the program and, you know, last year had some hiccups, but he's your guy now. I mean, he's the guy that probably sets the tone. How much have you put on him to kind of put his arms around these young guys and be that leader on the court, off the court, getting back into the gym, teaching your guys really how they all think it's easy. Let's face it, coach. They all think that transition is easy. Like, how much are you going to put on him to explain to him, guys, it's a lot harder than it looks on TV?
Well, you put on him what you would put on a captain of your team, and that's what he is. And he's done a great job. First of all, we had him away from basketball for about 3 months. He had a minor operation on his ankle, and he's now fully recovered. So his athleticism is there. He's happy. He's in shape, and he's sharing that. What we try to do during the 2 hours we work with the guys is show them routines that they can come in the gym with groups of two or three and work on their own. But that's still not you know, not the best way of doing it. But I'm really happy where Grayson is at emotionally, physically, you know, and he's really excited about leading these guys. And, you know, one of our freshmen, Gary Trent, who's a very good player, I'm talking to him after the workout yesterday. I said, "What do you think?" He says, "Coach, I didn't know G was that good." And and I said, "Well, he's healthy." And I said, "You didn't think he could shoot that well, did you?" He said, "Boy, he can really shoot." And that is, sometimes the high school guys coming in, they're the best or some of the best, and then all of a sudden they're with a veteran, and they say, "Whoa." And just teaching by example, Seth, is, I think, a good way of doing it, too.
How has he handled that? Getting away from it, do you think, has been good for him now to kind of reboot himself and get excited about kind of his new role in the new season and starting fresh?
Yeah, I think he's unbelievably excited. And, you know, he went through a very difficult year last year, emotionally, physically. He was hurt all year. And, you know, he played hurt all year. And so he's excited, his decision to come back. And, you know, he's an honors student. He's an academic All-American. And you know, he loves school, loves Duke, loves to be on the team, and is refreshed. And I'm really proud of him. And we're ready to. It's like we say, next play, let's go. Now, will everyone allow him to have a next play? We'll see about that. We'll see how, not fans, but how people who follow the game, who report the game, you know, how they, what they do with it, because we have no control over that.
I think, you know, just on that, I think people want to see him have a great year. I mean, as a former coach and someone that obviously now documents the game to some extent, I think, look, the kid came back. He's got a clean slate. It's time to move on. And I think everyone wants him to have a great year. And your year starts early because you guys are going to go to the Dominican Republic to play a couple of games and have that exposure. How important is that You got a terrific freshman class. You got, obviously, we didn't even mention Marquise Bolden, who I've just watched some tape. Looks like he's in phenomenal condition. Yeah. But how important is this trip to Dominican Republic for you guys?
Yeah, really important. You know, they've changed the calendar for international basketball, and it's not just every 2 years a major competition, the World Cup or the Olympics. Now in 2019, there'll be a World Cup, and in 2020, the Olympics. And so what FIBA, that's international basketball, has done is created a lot of events. And one of them is in late August and early September in Uruguay, a FIBA Americas tournament, and the Dominican Republic will compete. So we're going to play against them before they go down and actually, scrimmage them too. And for about a 7-day period, and with our young guys, it gives us an opportunity to get to know them and for them to get to know one another and to get playing time. You know, we have Javon Delorier, you know, Antonio Vrankovic, Jack White, these guys who haven't had much playing time. Well, now they will get some playing time. And you mentioned Marquise. Yeah, Marquise was hurt a lot last year. He's now 15 pounds lighter and has had a good spring and early summer. So, you know, we're looking forward to it.
Well, that's great. In fact, there's a chance. I heard a rumor that I actually might even be taking that trip with you guys.
Yeah, we have to get you a passport. I'm not sure that you'll.
they might not let me back in the country. Forget it. They'll let me out. They might let me back in the country.
Yeah, with Dominican Republic immigration, I'm not sure how their leader will look upon a media person coming in. But maybe we'll sneak in with our bags or something.
Well. If that works out, that'd be a lot of fun. And I hope I know this is a real busy time of the year with recruiting. You guys are back on the road, I guess, tomorrow on, for recruiting. And, last thing, you talk about recruiting. You know, you got a terrific point guard late in DeVal. You got, an impactful wing player in Trent and Wendell Carter, and Jordan Tucker can shoot it. How have those four guys transitioned into just kind of the Duke culture?
Yeah, really good. You know, one thing is that the four you mentioned are all more physically ready. They're not 18-year-olds who, they're going to have a great growth in, physical maturity. They already are there. So Gary Trent is strong. Wendell Carter, 6'9½", 260, and carries it well. Duvall is a terrific athlete. Tucker is actually a year older. At one time, he was his parents had him stay back a year. So it's a little bit more physically mature group than you would normally get, and actually pretty athletic.
Well, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun with him, and I'll look forward to seeing you. I think I'm going to go out to Vegas for a couple of days to watch some of those events, and and look forward to maybe even getting a chance to watch you guys in the Dominican Republic. Mike, I really appreciate you doing this, and it's great to hear that you're in good health and re-energized, and actually a summer away from USA basketball probably has been really good and for not only you but also for Duke basketball.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully that'll take place in August, and you'll be on the road during all those events in Vegas at the end of the month.
I'm going to be out there towards the end of the month and kind of check some of those kids out.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll run across one another. All right.
That's a deal. Thank you very much. We'll be back with the Little General, Alabama head coach Avery Johnson, in a moment. But first, a reminder that we'd like to hear from you. Whether you're new to the podcast or have been listening for some time, we'd like to know how we're doing. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe so we're easy to find the next time. And if you subscribe at ESPN Apps, we can send you an alert whenever we have a new episode. And you can always tweet us your thoughts at #StudentSection. I'd like to welcome in Roll Tide, Alabama basketball coach Avery Johnson, starting up his third year with the Crimson Tide. Coach Johnson, it is good to have you on the show, and a little different Alabama team next year. You had your two leading scorers and Braxton Key and Ingram. really have good freshman years, and now you've brought in what many think is maybe one of the best classes in the history of Alabama basketball. What have you learned about your freshmen in the first few weeks of summer workouts?
Well, I would say, first of all, thanks for having me on. Always love when I have a chance to just talk ball, and I appreciate you having me on. But my freshmen, they're all hard workers. Fortunately, you know, on the high school level and even on the AAU level, for the most part, they all had really good coaches and you know, good experiences, and they come from good families. So they've all come in with, you know, really good work ethic, and they're willing to learn, and they're like little sponges, and but they're talented. They're talented. Obviously, you know, there are areas that they need to improve in, and we're going to help them fundamentally, and with the fundamentals get better. But their attitudes are good, and they work hard, and they've been very coachable, and also they've been good teammates. You know, I think my man Seth Greenberg, I think you said this, said about when you come on campus, it's not about your stars. You know, it's not about whether you're a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star. All that stuff is behind now. Now you're part of Alabama basketball and trying to help us get to where we want to go. But overall, they've been great teammates.
Having an elite point guard, and a lot of people think Sexton was one of the best point guards in high school basketball, but, you know, you were a great point guard. You'd been around great point guards. What's the one thing you want to get across to Colin this time of the year to help him transition and be a leader that you need him to be with this really talented young group?
Yeah, the main thing is, Seth, I want him to be himself. I'm not trying to change him in a lot of ways, because I heard some of the comments about, you know, he's too energetic and he's too boisterous sometime on the floor. You know, he sometimes can be a little bit of a hothead. The main thing is we need that energy. We need the communication. My team last year was one of the most quietest teams I've ever seen in my life. I often tell him that you can't text on the basketball court. You have to talk. So I love Colin's energy. He talks a lot on the floor in a positive way. Every drill he takes very seriously. He has a professionalism about him where he's laser focused. And, you know, so the main thing is I just want him to be himself. And if there's something that I need to tweak or help him improve in a certain area, we're going to do it. But he's had a positive impact on our team, not just in terms of our style of play, because we weren't a very good offensive team last year, so we need to score more, but also just the way we communicate and helping the rest of our team just communicate better and louder on the floor.
Coach, you worked the ESPN. You've been there a couple of years. How many, why the hell did I leave broadcasting moments have you had as a coach? Because it's a lot different, brother, being on the sideline than it is being behind the mic.
Right. Well, I would say, Dan, for me, I got to a point where I wanted to experience the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat again. And you know, it's just hard. I had a great run at ESPN, 2 separate stints, 2 years each, and, you know, spent a lot of time in Bristol and obviously, you know, in Los Angeles with my friend Doris Burke and Jalen Rose and all of the wonderful people that was on our Wednesday night countdown show. But, you know, after you're done and you go back to your hotel room and there's no video to watch and there's not a meeting with a young man about how he can improve, and I just wanted to get back in the grind. And actually, Dan, I just wanted a new challenge. I could have easily gone back to the NBA, but this opportunity to work with young people and impact their lives on and off the court is just very gratifying for me.
You know, okay, you go to the SEC, Alabama, you know, people may not understand the history. There's a hell of a history in Alabama going back to the 70s before that. Is it, I don't know how the right way to put this to a rival school, but does the specter of Kentucky always hang over when you coach in the SEC?
Absolutely, but I embrace that, Dan. You know, a lot of people, you know, when Kentucky comes up, it's not always about, you know, that jealousy spirit towards Kentucky. Let's embrace their success and figure out a way how we can, you know, get in the ring with them and hopefully figure out a way for us to get a knockout. But if we don't ever get in the ring in terms of recruiting and, you know, and winning some games, you know, when we play against them, and then we're never going to reach our maximum potential. It's the same way people ask me, you know, why would you go to Alabama? It's a football school. You know, Nick Saban's the coach. I was like, yeah, I know Nick Saban's the coach, but let's figure out how we can partner with football and help get football to help us in terms of recruiting when kids come on campus, you know, go over to the football facilities and meet Coach Saban and you know, just embrace their success. And that's the same thing with Kentucky. I think they're good for our league. A lot of the, we have one or two guys that they were recruiting that decided to come to Alabama, and Coach Cal has talked about it. And I think it can be a positive if you embrace it and accept the challenge.
So, if you've been That's there awesome. 3 years, what is that? That is awesome. And I know the relationship you have with Coach Saban is really special, and he uses you also. It's not like you can't help the football program a little bit, because you have a couple of rings and you have a little bit of history and a little bit of a, not only personality, but success. So you've been around some pretty good people. So I would think you're a pretty good asset for their football program as well, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and, you know, he often jokes that, you know, I've met with him more in 2 years than, you know, a lot of coaches have met with him, you know, in his basket. I'm, you know, one of the basketball coaches that he's met with, you know, quite often, and I wanted to continue to be that way. And, you know, Coach Saban had a really good thing when he was at Michigan State, and he and Coach Izzo, you know, had both programs rolling, and you know, it can be done. We've seen it happen with Billy Donovan and Steve Spurrier at Florida, and so I think it can be done. And I love when I have a chance to meet prospective student athletes that are considering coming to Alabama on a football scholarship, and their parents, maybe their parents knew me from when I played with the Spurs or coached the Mavericks, and maybe they're fans, and now they want to come meet the little general. And that's always a thrill for me to meet those families, because I was a parent of a prospective student athlete 4 years ago or 3 years ago when Avery Jr. was going around the different schools visiting. And so it's exciting when I have a chance to meet with a football recruit or a gymnastics recruit or a softball or women's basketball recruit. We all try to help each other.
Nothing better than meeting a little general. But 3 years, what's been the biggest surprise in the 3 years? Like, you know, you walked in. Look, you had a good handle on college basketball. Your son was recruited. You had a chance to watch the whole AAU scene, you know, as he was going through the process. But what's been the biggest surprise to you, or the biggest change you've had to make in how you do things over the past 3 years?
Well, I'll start with the biggest change. I think in terms of the technical part of coaching, I have to be more patient. You know, on the NBA level, there's not as many practices, and the practices aren't that long. So the quantity of practices are significantly lower on the NBA level because there are more games, and the players are older, so basically you can kind of put something out there and they just go and do it. On the collegiate level, there are more practices, less games, and the kids are a lot younger and not as mature. So, you know, you just have to be patient in terms of the technical part of coaching when you're trying to teach something. And, you know, you just can't teach it one day and move on the next day. You have to go over it over and over again, and they'll eventually get it. So I think that's the big change. Now, the one thing I've been pleasantly surprised about, and Dan alluded to it earlier, Alabama – have some fans that are really excited about basketball. We have a rich tradition here going back to Wimp Sanderson and C.M. Newton, and we've sent a ton of players to the NBA. Robert Horry went to Alabama. He's won seven championships, and Antonio McDyess and Mo Williams, and back to guys like Derek McKee, who I played with at Seattle. So we have a rich history here, and people are starving for basketball to really be relevant here. And it's been exciting to see the support we've gotten from our fan base.
Coach, how have you handled the summer? You know, college basketball now, you can work out a little bit in the summer. You can practice. You can do things. What's your philosophy of college kids in the summertime?
Well, the great thing about us is we just started practicing for our exhibition games in Canada in the second week of August. So we have these 10 practice days. So that's been unbelievable that we're able to get in here and really have some real practices getting ready for the Canadian trip. And I'm able to practice earlier in the week, and then we obviously go out and recruit. But I just think the main thing is about skill development. So when we're on our normal practice where you only get 2 hours a week, you know, we try to break it down into 3 40-minute days of practice, and just that skill development, that one-on-one time with our players where they can get in the gym and work on developing skills, proper footwork. It's amazing how many kids travel today on the court. And just proper footwork, technique, stance, catching the ball with two hands, on time, on target passes. Because everybody wants to just shoot threes or dunk the basketball. The mid-range game is still relevant. So it's just about getting them to improve on their skill set so that when we bring it together as a team, we can be a much better team. And for us, we need to be much better on the offensive end because we were a top, 25 or 30 in defense in the country, but we weren't very good offensively because we need to pass, dribble, and shoot better and also make our free throws.
Coach, you mentioned, you know, the 3 40-minute sessions. Do you think, you know, coming from the NBA and you see all these guys having workout gurus and everyone wants to work in their game, I think the NBA in general has changed because it seems like the players are a little bit more professional in terms of their job, and the money's crazy. But would you like to see college coaches have greater access to their players in the summer?
I would love to. Obviously, you get 6 hours with the strength and conditioning coach and 2 hours, you know, with basketball skill work. Obviously, 2 hours a week is not enough. I'd like to see more. I'd like to see us go to maybe instead of just allowing the teams that are going on foreign trips to have these 10 days of practice, you know, what about, you know, incorporating, you know, some more practice days in the summertime? You know, even if it's, you know, 3 practice days per summer session where you can have, you know, some real practices in the summertime. You don't have to do it every day, but 3 practice days each summer session is not going to hurt anybody. So, I've suggested that, and we'll see where it goes. But I know 2 hours a week is not enough.
You know, the crazy thing about that is, and Dan, I think you'd agree with it. We all lived it, but like they're giving you 8 hours. Why can't you say, all right, you got 8 hours. You can use them any way you want. Why does it have to be 6 hours away from basketball in strength and conditioning and only 2 hours on the court being that, you know, let's face it. If you could use it any way you want, you'd probably do 5 hours on the court. You'd probably do 3 hours in strength and conditioning, three days a week, an hour session or 4 days a week. You'd split it up, you know, however you'd want it. But don't you think it's crazy that the NCAA says, we're giving you 8 hours, but you only can work on, like, the reason the kid's there, he's on a basketball scholarship, you can only work on his game for 2 hours. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it really doesn't. But I just think, and maybe it can change from week to week, especially in July, since we're out, you know, from Wednesday to Sunday, you know, traveling to all of these different cities, recruiting and watching these kids on, you know, with the AAU schedule. So, you know, sometime early in the week, if you can get a little bit more time in terms of your basketball workouts on the floor, you know, that can be helpful. You know, maybe you do 4 hours early in the week before you leave on Wednesday to travel around the five different cities in a five-day period, you know, watching kids on the AAU circuit. So I think it's some, you know, coaches have recommended it. We'll see where it goes. But, yeah, 2 hours a week is not enough.
Well, Avery, I appreciate you taking
I think,
what would you do, D-Squared?
I'm sorry. I think that it ought to be mandatory. Like, I think we got it backwards. Hey, man, you're coming to Alabama. You're out of state. You're making 50 grand a year by coming here. You have to be in the gym for 9 hours, 10 hours. I mean, we're the only thing that pays people and doesn't demand of anything. We lessen the demands. But that's just my own soapbox, Avery, so never mind that. But
don't get him started, Avery. Believe me.
I'll leave you guys with this. You guys will appreciate this. You know, I'm always talking to my players about how we handle officials, you know, during the games. So I had a situation with a young man who was complaining about my officiating. I'm the referee in practice. And he's like, "Coach, you really are a bad official." I said, "That's intentional, son. I'm a bad official in practice for a reason, because when we start playing in the SEC and during the season, I don't want you talking to officials. You understand that?"
Hey, if you don't think Alabama's going to get cheated in Kentucky, are you crazy? You know that's coming.
Well, guys, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Avery, I appreciate taking time. And I'm going to make this prediction, D-Squared. The team that's going to challenge Kentucky in the SEC and where everyone's throwing these schools out, I'm telling you, next year, Alabama's improved offense with the defense that Avery's done. The challenger for Kentucky in the SEC is going to be the Alabama Crimson Tide Roll Tide. No pressure on you, Coach.
Hey,
that's all right.
Hey, Avery, that's like Moses coming down from the mount, man.
Brother. No, you know what? The great thing is, if people are saying that kind of stuff, then, you know, maybe we are doing something good. And if they're right. not talking about you, then you probably aren't doing anything. So we'd rather have it that way.
You got it, Coach. Thank you. Have a great rest of the summer, man.
Thank you, guys. All right. Bye-bye.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, fellas, it is the middle of July. As we know, a lot of the students are on vacation, but we got one guy who's still sitting there. You know who it is, Seth?
Yeah, I think Kelly won, but my guy Dockage can't trash my guy. I mean, he might not. I mean, he's going to ask a question, but D squared, he's our guy, man. I mean, like, he's there 24/7, 7 days a week. He's like, you got to have one guy that calls your show every time, even though you might not like it. You're going to end up taking the call. And you're going to deal with it.
Yeah, then I cuss him out and send him on his way. Let's hear it.
I was going to say there are three guys I know who are always thinking about college basketball, but even you guys today talked about NBA Summer League. So I think there's only one guy I know who's always thinking about the college game, and it's ID Kelly One. And he says, with the 3-on-3 hoops coming to the Olympics, what college team from last year would win an NCAA 3-on-3 tournament?
Ooh, D squared. Come on. That's a pretty good question, D squared.
I wouldn't be mad at Lonzo Ball, TJ Leaf, and then you got to decide, but Isaac Hamilton is a scorer. That's three pretty good guys in the half court that got enough size. They could play most people, I think.
What do you think of Bam, Fox, and Monk?
That's what
I think. Bam, Fox, and Monk would probably win it, and like Roger Federer, not lose a set.
At 37.
Yes. And guys, I said that ID Kelly One is always thinking about the college game, but guess what? He has an NBA related question here too. We're double dipping with ID Kelly because he's sitting all by himself in the student section. He says, "Fellas, with the past two number one overall picks in the NBA coming from underperforming college teams, does making your squad better in college even matter anymore?"
Man, that is a fantastic question, and my answer is it absolutely does not. Because, look, I don't think either kid was at fault for their team's record.
but they certainly didn't elevate the program. So in terms of getting to the NBA, I don't think it matters even a little bit. Because, look, both of them are number one picks. Long story short, used to be, man, this guy makes everybody around him better. We're going to draft him higher. And maybe that happens after the lottery, and maybe that happens after the top few picks. But there's no arguing because the two picks have been on bad college teams.
Yeah, it's funny. It all depends on how you look at it. I agree. Look, I think what it proves is that, like, we hear these kids, oh, I'm going to Washington, I'm going to LSU, and, you know, Ben Simmons says, we're going to win national championship. Well, it's hard to win national championship. Not everyone can coach a one-and-done guy, even though these guys were the number one picks in the draft. But to win in college, you need a great players, but you also need those grizzled veterans to balance off your great players. So in terms of the NBA draft, no, it doesn't, because the NBA draft is a futures market. It has nothing to do with what you did in college. It has to do with what you bring, what tangible skills and talents and athleticism you bring to help someone improve their organization moving forward. But in terms of, I'm an old school idiot, man, I want a guy who at least understands competing and winning, not playing to play and not putting up numbers and not, you know, having one foot in and one foot out. And that's why when we look at, you know, say what Cal's done with one-and-done guys to an extent, it's incredible to get all those talented guys that have no understanding of how to compete at the highest level because they never had to some semblance try to play together. But, yeah, it doesn't mean anything in the NBA. But, damn, just when you look back, like do you think these guys, Dan, will look back? You think Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons that someday will look back on, man, I spent a year there. What really happened? You think that guys even look at it that way?
No. I think there are three things that athletes think, and they pertain to lack of success and arrest. And they are these. I'm a man. Number two, it's in the past. And number three is God's the only one that can judge me. Those three things always go when something goes wrong. So this would be, oh, man, it's in the past. That's a long time ago. Well, no, it wasn't. It was like, you know, 2 months ago. Yeah, it's in the past. Those are the three things that always come up when guys discuss either a failing or an arrest. It's in the past, I'm a man, and only God can judge me. So in this case, it would be, it's in the past, and the past happened the moment that these guys got drafted. They didn't care any longer about what was said or done or they did or didn't do at their school. I really believe that.
Wow, you brought religion into it today. I mean, this has been a incredible show right there. I liked this. Wow.
I just got surly. When I was a kid, the Gary Country Club, Gary, Indiana, we didn't have enough money, so I had a caddy. So for the first time in my life, I belonged to a country club, and I just had a guy tell me I had to tuck my shirt in. I'm like, I don't want to tuck my shirt in. Why tucking my shirt in? It's a sporting event. What? You know what I mean? Guy's like, hey, Dan, you know, you just drove up. I was sitting here messing around. He goes, you know, you got to tuck your shirt in. I'm like, well, I didn't say anything because we were on the air. But damn, when I'm getting ready to play golf or I'm getting basket, take your shirt out. Let's have a swing. Let's go. What the heck's going on around here? That's why I never.
Hey, you know what? I just want, like, that's why I know there's no doubt amount in my mind that there's the member guest right here going on that D squared.
This weekend, I was practicing today.
Yeah, this D squared, the smart money is going on. My guy D squared got the candy cap where he needs it. I got the scouting report on the course. He's played a course that he can put, you post a low number. If he can get the putter working just a little bit, D squared might be cashing in. I'm just saying.
Double D has already, I've already budgeted the money I'm going to win off these suckers this weekend because it's already in the family budget. So, yeah, they got a probably got the right handicap and the right course. Dangerous. Dangerous.
There you go. You don't get it anywhere else but the Courtside podcast. I'm just telling you. You don't get this kind of information just anywhere. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, and I would also encourage people to use the hashtag student section if they want this kind of great analysis, which goes completely off the rails at the end of the segment. Use the hashtag student section because ID Kelly is getting lonely there, sitting in the stands all by himself, wondering if he should storm the floor or not. He needs some other people to join him, and you can do so by using the hashtag student section, guys.
Before we go, I want to remind you to subscribe to our show on the ESPN app, on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you prefer to access podcasts. Our thanks again to Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski, and Alabama's Avery Johnson. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.